The Tom Woods Show, episode 1128.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, you may have noticed it is impossible to have a rational conversation about guns these days. The perfect time for my brand new ebook, Your Facebook Friends Are Wrong About Guns. Get your free copy at wrongaboutguns.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. Absolutely delighted to be able to welcome Owen Benjamin back to the show. Owen is a comedian who has been running into some trouble lately for saying unfashionable things, but really they were the sort of things that everybody thought were obvious even like 10 minutes ago. So it's kind of a microcosm of what's going on in all of society. I don't know what to say really about it, and I wanted to get him back on to talk about this particular aspect of his career right now. And he's had quite a successful career in entertainment, and I'm sure we'll get into his background a bit today, but he absolutely deserves our support. He is out there fighting just for decency and free speech and free exchange of ideas, and how about not intimidating people? How about not being, you know, for all the people who talk about intolerance, these are the most hate-filled people you can possibly imagine, and they have their fangs out for Owen Benjamin. So let's talk to him about what's going on. Owen, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me back. I love it.
All right, listen, I've started listening to your podcast. I love Why Didn't They Laugh? I frankly like your solo episodes. I like the episode, the old-timey, classic, vintage Why Didn't They Laugh? Like the Caesar salad days of Why Didn't They Laugh, when you would take a joke, and this must have been a bear to put together audio-wise, all the different clips you had to isolate and then insert into the audio, but I don't care how much work it was for you because it's a lot of enjoyment for me, because I get to watch the comedian's craft right before my ears as you're going through material that you know there's something there, and yet it's not quite... It's not killing at all. And you think, well, so what? So then you improve it a bit, and then it gets somewhat better, and you speculate on why it might have gotten better, and then finally you just crush it with that joke. That's a really, really interesting process for a non-comedian. In fact, I told my friend Bob Murphy about this. I said, yeah, he's got this podcast. And he turned to me and he said, I think that's the best idea for a podcast I've ever heard.
That's awesome. Thank you. Well, if you like that, have you seen my documentary, 60 Minutes, 7 Days?
I've been meaning to watch it. We linked to it on the last time you were here.
Oh, if you like the Why Didn't They Laugh, it's a full documentary, and it's pretty clean. I know we're just talking about kids when we first started talking. It's just me trying to write an hour in 1 week. And just, it shows the bombing and the tweaking and the interaction I have with my family and my friends and where the jokes come from and what things I don't know about a story or a culture that makes me have a blind spot that I have to recorrect. And it's that process, that Why Didn't They Laugh process, that 60 Minutes, 7 Days, that's on YouTube for free too, if anyone wants to watch it. That's like just such evidence of the importance of the free speech, because comedians and artists and academics and scientists and all these people, we don't go into something knowing the answer, and we have to be allowed to make mistakes. And so much of my career has been showing the world my mistakes. And that's one reason why I've had such backlash, is because my fearless nature of hyperbole and irony and exaggeration and satire is what makes me a good comic at the end of the day. But you have to let it play out for the artist and the scientist to even know what is true and what isn't true. And that's something that I think we're really seeing right now in our culture, is our inability to accept growth and learning through mistakes.
Yeah, no kidding. And in this thing, at least the episodes of the podcast that I've heard, you are just showing the world, look, I'm not infallible. I learn through trial and error, just like everybody else. And of course, other comedians do this too. They just don't document it for the whole world to see. And by the way, you've had jokes sometimes where I've actually been sitting there literally asking, why didn't they laugh? That was great. I mean, that thing is brilliant. What the heck's the matter with these people?
Thanks.
Now, incidentally, I've listened to some of your, because you interact with your fans really, really well. I mean, it seems to me, even though I haven't been to one of your shows in person, you seem like you've got just some of the best, nicest people, most encouraging people supporting you that you could possibly ask for.
They're unbelievable. Like once it was very organic that they started calling themselves the Unbearables, and it was a bear theme, because I've seen that in entertainers for years, how different fans of an artist will call themselves a certain name. And I never really understood it until it happened very organically in my career because of my last spec, not the recent special, but the one before called Feed the Bear. And the bear archetype is so fitting for so many people that people started just going with it. And the closer I get to a lot of these people, the more they're just lovely. They're a lot of them, they range from molecular engineers to truck drivers to stay-at-home moms to anything you can imagine. But the unifying factor is trying to find the right answer. You know, you brought up Dave Smith earlier, our mutual friend. A compliment I gave him years ago when I first met him was, if I give you information that contradicts your opinion and you think it's right, you look excited, not threatened. And I think that that's a thing I've always liked about the libertarian community is where it's like, it's more like what's the right answer versus what are my talking points. And I just think that it's a really amazing time for comedy because a lot of these people are now being linked by the internet and by YouTube and all this stuff that they never would have. And I still do Why Didn't They Laugh episodes, but this is the thing about Why Didn't They Laugh is it used to take me 2 or 3 weeks to do an episode. And now I do a morning live stream every day at YouTube/Owen Benjamin Comedy. And I just don't do enough stand up to be able to do it every day. And I really enjoy doing it every day and having that contact with listeners. So I will be doing more Why Didn't They Laugh? Because there's still, I mean, I want to do Why Didn't They Laugh about some of these tricky concepts. But
yeah,
again, I need a lot of audio and it takes more time. It's more like a radio lab than it is a normal podcast where I have to really analyze and face that mirror of who I really am, like the never ending story, and then let it out.
I was listening to a recent episode of yours called I Know Who You Are.
Oh, yeah.
And in that one, I want to get to that in a few minutes because the issues you raised there are so interesting and important about the kind of comedian you want to be and the kind of comedian you have no intention of being forced into being by this bizarre situation you find yourself in. So let's jump in there. You've been having some episodes recently with venues and with enemies of yours in what we might call the comedy community. So bring us up to date on that.
Oh, sure. Well, it all started. The main thing that really started was I did Steven Crowder's show a while ago and we just had a blast. And I started getting these weird vibes from people. And then when I came out against transgender children, not the children, you understand what I'm saying. Hormone blockers to 5-year-olds type thing. And I was arguing with a specific guy who's doing this with his kid. And he's a big NPR host and he has clout in the left wing entertainment community. And so I was at CAA and they basically told me straight up, like, apologize or we have to let you go. And I'm like, oh, so you mean lie? Like, say I believe something I don't. And so I didn't. I stuck to my guns and a bunch of colleges canceled on me. I even tweeted out one of the letters because I think that there's a big thing that happens where people don't always believe. Like, I'll say something like that and people are like, oh, okay, whatever. I'm like, no, read the letter. Read that this is literally about the fact that I don't agree with 5-year-olds going on hormone blockers. And then there's a cascade of cancellations. And then that's when I really started seeing these boycott type moves. And so what I would do is, and I've had some great people in my corner throughout all this and a lot of really great comedians and a lot of really great media people, but I realized that I would probably have to start renting my own venue and then selling them out through my website and then just doing it like that. And then I found that they would cancel those as well. And especially if it's linked to a school, like Merritt School of Music in Chicago canceled me and Brooklyn School of Music and all these musicals. And I play classical piano, so I thought it was a no-brainer to do music. And then it just kept going and going. And the thing about some of these bands is I want to do a lot of relationship material about how men and women are different. And I like to play songs and just really normal stuff. But the more people keep backing me into a corner, the more I have to become more political because of that old quote, you can ignore politics, but politics won't ignore you. And to see my livelihood getting so threatened and to see active campaigning against me by a very small and very loud group of people that I consider at this point to be straight up authoritarian socialists, anti-American, just really disgusting people. The more I know that this fight is something I can't back down from. And for me, it's just a very simple First and Second Amendment. I think if we can keep those, we're okay. And we can keep squabbling like we always have as America. But if we give up the freedom of speech or the freedom to arm ourselves, we're absolutely, we could be Venezuela. And I don't, historically, that happens.
You know, I've got somebody, and I have a private Facebook group for people who support my show, which, by the way, if you don't have that, that is probably the one thing that I offer that got the most people to come on board to support the show. I never in a million years would have guessed it would be that, but everybody loves it. Anyway, we've got a great community in there, and one person in there has an active Twitter account, and somebody impersonated her to make you look bad. The whole point of impersonating her was to portray her as an Owen Benjamin supporter, as an unbearable, which she is, and then to spout kind of insane nonsense constantly so as to reflect badly on you. Yeah, that's unbelievable. That's insane.
Oh, and this is why we aren't easily taken down, and why it's there's so much vitriol and so much money being spent to try and take me down, because these things aren't cheap. We really know each other. This guy Coddington Bear, he's a mathematician, literally great guy. I've let him stay. I have a rental property in my town when I shot the special, and I let a bunch of the unbearables just stay there, just because I was so honored that a lot of them made huge journeys to come to the taping, and it was just unbelievable. And I let him stay at my home, and I know him. And so when I see him getting cloned and saying all these like vicious things about black people and Jews and all this stuff, it's so obvious to any of the unbearables that this is a clone. And this is a way to try and make my followers appear to be racist, which will then discredit any of the fun non-PC jokes that I do that are not racist. And it's really pathetic, but it's effective in a lot of ways. It's effective for people that don't know what's really happening behind the scenes. And it's just this crazy culture war that these people keep getting cloned. And then Twitter will suspend their account for a day or a week for some inane tweet. And then they will be cloned. And then everything about their Twitter account is matched, except their name is like one digit off. And then they will just start ranting about me being in the Ku Klux Klan or just any absurd nonsense, because it just discredits me for any venue or any sponsor or anybody that just, even if it's the odds are 1 in 1,000 that it's true, they just want to avoid any conflict.
Right.
All it's done though is make my support more galvanized. It's made me more focused and more fearless. Honestly, it's done the opposite of what I think they thought it would do. It's made me just be able to hit the heart of some of these dragons and not worry about the many headed Hydra that just keep popping up. And I'm really not worried about it. I'm willing to just go with the war of it because I like culture wars because no one dies. And I would much rather fight this war than if our freedoms are actually taken away. I really would hope that we never have to fight a real war because I have children. And but so that's why, as long as it's tweets and retweets and venues and stuff, I'm fine. I think we'll win. But the leftists are really, really vicious, nasty people capable of doing some real weird stuff.
Yeah, you know, and look, it's not to say that our side doesn't have its share of nasty people, but I just find it quantitatively and qualitatively different. And I also find, like, just even something silly like on Amazon, a lot of our people, I don't want to say our people, but some people were giving Mark Levin really bad book reviews because he'd been critical of Ron Paul. And so some Ron Paul people thought, we'll show him, we'll give him 1-star reviews for his book. So then his people started giving Ron Paul 1-star reviews for his book. There's no winner in any of this.
Right.
And so I told my listeners that I think this is a an extremely juvenile thing to do. This is totally beneath us. We don't act this way. The other side acts like this. We don't act like this. And Levin thanked me on the radio for doing that, because enough's enough. That's just stupid. But in general, but I think most of us in general would say, well, you can't do that, right? You got to stick to the ideas. You got to stick to above the belt. But in general, my experience from the other side has not been that way. It has indeed been quite vicious. Now, when listening to that podcast episode of yours that I mentioned, called I Know Who You Are, I was really struck by this conflict that is still unresolved, I think, in your mind about exactly how to proceed, given that what you're being put through is almost compelling you to become a shock comic or a comic whose whole shtick is that he's put upon by the left and he's shut down at different venues. But that's not the comedian you want to be. You just want to go and do your stuff. And even some of your supporters are saying, well, you got to do this, you got to do that. But you just want to be you, and they're making it hard to be you. And I wish I had a good answer for you on that.
I think it's I almost feel like that grizzled detective that just wants to put his gun and badge down and go home. I try really hard, and in general, I think I'm pretty successful at keeping my show, the stand-up I want to do. I don't want to be defined by my enemies. And that being said, the social media world, it's not really possible. It's like when you're called all these names and people keep coming at you, I think one of the things that people seem to like about me is that I won't back down. I won't kneel. I won't accept it. I won't have this. Like, one of my things I say on stage is I have no white pride, but I also have no white shame. And I won't have false shame, but I also don't have pride. I have pride in my individual accomplishments. And I think that it's a very, very fine line that I have to always figure out between being a comedian and being political. And I just think the government has expanded to a point where it was tough not to be. And there was a long time when I didn't think about politics at all, because it didn't expand to this degree where gender doesn't exist in first grade classes. It's just, I don't know the future that they want to have. And just people actively trying to ban the Second Amendment, and comedians going to jail in England and being fined in Canada. And you know, it's like the word censorship is more triggering to me than the C word. That's my C word. So it's like, I think that the political correct world is such a scam. You know, like Lenin said that he would get rid of all the czar's political prisons. So all they did is call it political isolators and built 40 times more and sent them all to Siberia. It's like the way people handle problems is to just switch the name of the problem and then get mad at anyone who says the name to avoid the problem. And, you know, that's the trick of the political correct censorship world. And I'm just not going to buy into it because the stakes are too high. That being said, you're right, though. I don't want to be a shock comic. And I'm actually really not. It's like I still maintain, like, I'll make fun of Bernie Sanders on stage. Like, I do him as Bane, where it's you know, it's like, your people all deserve everything you've ever wanted. You know, I make fun of socialism in a fun way. But other than that, I try not to to go too crazy with it. But my whole career has been somewhat provocative, because that's kind of what people pay comedians to do. And if anybody looked back at like 2010 comedy, like most of these people that are now these holier than thou statist religion comedians, and, you know, the Jimmy Kimmels and the Sarah Silvermans and all these people, you know, Jimmy Kimmel was in blackface. Sarah Silverman used to talk about how she wanted to murder Jesus. It's like these people are not clean people. It's like they're all provocateurs. And I have no problem with anybody doing any joke, but you can't be the joke police as well as doing these satirical hyperbolic jokes. And I think I've been put in this weird position where I'm one of the last people in comedy that isn't going to pretend that there's something wrong about being male, or something wrong in being white, or something wrong in having your wife stay home and raise your children. It's like, I'm not going to say that there's shame in that. And for that, I am getting just this crazy backlash.
Tell me the specifics about what's been happening in Pittsburgh, and let's see what we can do to promote April 28th.
Oh, well, I had a venue in Pittsburgh cancel because of this. Basically, what's happening is these local comedian scenes are becoming just straight up socialists. It's like they're the word police. They all have the same political agenda. They're all pushing the same thing. I've noticed that, and it's really disturbing. It's almost like when I was up and coming, I wanted credits. I wanted to get on Leno, which I got on. I wanted to get on Fallon, which I got on. I wanted Comedy Central. I've had two specials. I want to be on a sitcom. I've had 3 years as a regular on a sitcom. Like, those were the things I would look for. And nowadays, it seems like these young open mic comedians, not even young, a lot of them, their credit is to get in a Twitter fight with a famous person and to be into virtue signal and to say, don't say this word, don't say this word. And so they're organized, and most of them are in other political activist groups, and they just scare the heck out of other venues until everybody won't allow me to go. But the thing is any venue that just the free market will make it so any venue that isn't like that will make money. And they'll see that my crowd is really, really nice, and they're not hateful, and they're just multicultural, I guess they call it these days. It's just so ironic how people portray me versus what reality is. And so we have other venues that are down to have us, but I can't really list them on my website. So it'll be like the day before I'll be able to announce where I'm performing. But yeah, like Minneapolis canceled me at a venue that I'd already paid the money for. And then I got another one, and then another outrage calling thing happened. So I had to get another one, but now we're good because I know the owner. But like, people think it's always the current outrage thing that I'm involved in that day and I should apologize or whatever. They've been doing this since I condemned, not condemned, that's the wrong verb, but criticized Beyonce for doing that Black Lives or Black Power salute during the Super Bowl. Ever since then, it's been just a constant war with like people trying to ban me from places, and there's no end, and they don't want an apology, and they don't want forgiveness, and they don't want any middle ground. They just want to take me down. They see the world as a zero sum game. They don't understand that the free market lifts all boats. You know, they think they're owed stuff, and I just, it's just crazy. It's a crazy time to be a comedian, but it's important that I don't stop. Because a lot of people email me and DM me their horror stories at where they work or where they go to school or what's happened in their life. And they're like straight up, they're like, you give me strength to get out of bed sometimes because this world is so insane. And I'm like, those are the people that I don't kneel, that help me stay strong. And my wife, you know, who's half Mexican, and she's being called racist by white women. And she's like, these people drive me crazy. Like, you can't, we got to win. And so I won't stop. Even if it becomes some weird, you know, speakeasy type comedy situation, like when alcohol was banned, where, you know, the knock knock, who's there to get in the right club that no one really knows about, because comedy's starting to become illegal, and people don't see it yet, but I see it, and a lot of other comedians see it, but it's really is starting to become like comedy is illegal, and they do it in this real sneaky Marxist way where it's through middle management and through lies and through these campaigns, like your follower who had her account cloned, where the public doesn't see it until it's too late.
Yeah.
And I'm sounding the alarm.
Yeah, no kidding. Because a lot of alarms that were sounded before, people said, oh, come on, you're exaggerating. No one will ever advocate that. No one will ever advocate A, B, and C. And now they're already on to X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
So yeah, I am a little bit worried. Now, if people want to stay up on the news about your venues, do you have an e-blast you send out, or is it social media or your website directly? Where do you direct people?
Well, when people buy tickets, they do it through my PayPal at hugepianist.com. And so we have all the emails. So,
oh, smart. Okay.
Yeah. So whenever, if there's any venue change, if there's any issues, we can literally be in contact with everybody. Because that's why I don't use any box office from any club or venue, because except for the Improvs, Funny Bones, you know, places that I trust. Like, I'll be at the Brea Improv. Because comedy clubs, the good news about a lot of comedy clubs is they aren't as susceptible to this stuff. Like, hats off to the Improv for keeping my weekend, because I know they took a lot of heat. And I'm friends with a lot of these Improv owners, so I know what these activists are saying. And the lies you wouldn't believe. Like, they say that they're a comedy club owner in LA and I'm in the Ku Klux Klan and people, and I just all this stuff. And people that are just these venues, these theaters, these rock clubs, maybe they don't know enough about comedy or know enough about what these people are saying, but they just believe it and cancel me. And they do it in a pretty, if I wasn't so focused and so, if I didn't have as much purpose as I do, it would be horrifically embarrassing. Like how to have venues say that they can't host someone like me. And, but it's all good. I've been through worse. So it's all good.
Well, the whole thing is a real illustration to the world, if they're paying attention, of it's a microcosm of what's going on in society. Your life is a miniature reproduction of what's going on in the whole society.
Yeah, and I allow it to be dramatized publicly. And I love Joe Rogan. He's my boy. And I've done his podcast like 3 times in the last 6 months. But this last one, you know, Rogan was saying I tweet too much and stuff. And he does have a point. You know, I probably do. And I probably engage with certain people that I shouldn't. And I don't need to, you know, the eagles don't peck with the pigeons and all that stuff. But at the same time, I allow the drama to unfold in front of the public. And that's something that's very powerful. And it's something that people need to see, because the thing that would ascend me to more power and more wealth would be to keep the cards close to my chest, you know, act like I know comedians that I've opened for in the past that have not sold enough tickets. So they'll say that they hurt their back or something and not show their weakness to the audience, to the people, because it hurts their hierarchy image of power. But for me, when something like this happens, I reveal it. And not friends, not people that mess with me that I respect. It's not like that, but it's like a venue or something like this. And I'll let it unfold. I'll do those live streams every morning. I'll show what happens to my friends and my family, the shrapnel in the town I live in that people have had to deal with. And that way people can see examples. It's like the Gulag Archipelago. The reason it was so powerful is because it was the journey of a Stalinist military, full-blown rah-rah communism guy into the gulag and then back out again through his reconnection to Christianity and to a higher calling than the secular things that the Soviets had promised him, and just that redemption story that's possible, but it had to be dramatized. You had to see what they did with women and what they did, how they fed you in a car or in a railway car. You know, you have to see the details. Like, human beings are programmed for stories. And so I have no problem revealing these stories and letting them play out on social media and showing where the monsters are, because this is not my first tango with monsters, you know? And so I know what they're scared of. They're constantly seeking approval. They want social approval over any virtue. They don't like that. So if you put them into light, if you show what they are, it's the best defense you have against them. And just hope that more people haven't been corrupted by this really disgusting leftist way of viewing the world. Like, equality of outcome, not equality of opportunity. It's genocide. And it's like the only way to make a forest equal is with an axe, not with seeds. And I think what you were talking about earlier with Levin and the Amazon stuff, I think the thing that makes the right a little more productive is we're more in the conservation business and the building business, and the left seems to be more like the Joker from Batman, where it's just about burning everything to the ground. And even in that example, which I do agree with you that it hurts everyone if everyone's just in this one-star rating BS, at least they're still doing it as themselves and not cloned bots, like claiming someone's like a racist.
Right.
It's like the left takes it to a degree where they don't just want your career hurt. They want your life ruined. If you killed yourself, they'd be happy. Like it's just so mind blowing to me, the depths at the personal just attacks that they're willing to do, that I'm just incapable of doing, because it goes against the thing that makes the right strong and the Achilles heel is principles that you try to follow even when they go against you. And that's good for the long term, but in the short term, it can be very, very hard to deal with.
You know, in the meantime, I think about people who are held up to us as being brave. And I don't maybe want to mention names, but people who do sort of politically correct things or are enjoy the favor of politically correct groups. Well, we're told this person is brave because, you know, they change their gender or whatever it is. But how is that brave in that they're going to be cheered by Hollywood, the media, the political classes, academia, popular culture in general, every elite everywhere, the CEOs of all the Fortune 500 companies? Yeah, you could call that bravery if you wanted to, but how about people who come out and say what really in the grand scheme of things are extremely mild things, have their livelihoods destroyed, their reputations ruined, not a word about them, but those are the brave ones.
Right. Well, that's the irony about brave. When you're dealing with a government our size and with just how everything's set up, it's becoming doublespeak, where brave is literally cowardice. And it's like tolerance is intolerance. It's the opposite. And it's like the things that they're claiming are brave is just the biggest example of compliance they can find. And they'll call that brave. Like people that agree to nonsense, and that's bravery. And the people that the kid from The Emperor with No Clothes was not called brave. He was probably banned from Pittsburgh.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, speaking of Pittsburgh, tell us about other cities you have coming up in the future. Of course, people will have to keep an eye out for what the venue is, but they can certainly go ahead and get tickets.
Kirkland, Washington. And venue change on that one, but we already have another one that we'll email anybody. And then where else? Brea, California. I'm doing Friday, Saturday there in April. And then Pittsburgh. And then there's some more down the line, but that's it for right now because I'm having another baby in August. So I'm trying to pull back on the road a bit. But every morning, youtube.com/OwenBenjaminComedy. And then my website, hugepianist.com. There's two self-produced hour specials. One from England. I produced Feed the Bear. And then the most recent one was How Dare Me. And you can get those. And that's about it.
All right. So I'm going to link to all that stuff also on the show notes page. This is episode 1128. So tomwoods.com/1128. Go out there and support Owen Benjamin if you can in person. If you can't support him in person, support him behind the scenes in one way or another, because, well, frankly, he deserves it. And he's up against evil, terrible people. So to me, that's plenty good reason. Plus, he's just a good guy. So why are you still listening to me? You should be going over to hugepianist.com and checking out what he's got, following him and spreading the word about him. Well, Owen, best of luck. You are fighting the good fight, and I'm really glad to have been able to talk to you again.
Thanks, Tom. You're the best.
All right, everybody. Remember, I release a new episode of The Tom Woods Show every weekday. Ron Paul and I will be talking tomorrow about homeschooling, education, and state indoctrination. So that's not one to be missed. Hope you'll subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. You can subscribe very easily on iTunes by just going to tomwoods.com/iTunes. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.